8:01 on Monday, July 26th, and you're listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM. Good morning and welcome to the Master Gardener Hour, the shortest hour in radio. Good morning. This is John Duke. I'll be your host until 9 o'clock. My guest today was supposed to be Jim Hansel, a highly educated and enthusiastic plantsman from Ohio River Grass to talk about ornamental grasses and lots of other interesting things. I hope he's okay. Maybe he'll show up a little later. Amy Duke, my gardening partner, is here with me too. And also we have my friend, Master Gardener Bruce Murray, to help out in the studio and jump in too. Good morning. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, John. Bruce.
WAIF FM, as a community radio station, serves only to open its airwaves to responsible divergent points of view. The opinions expressed during the Master Gardener Hour do not reflect the views of WAIF, its staff, or Board of Trustees. The opinions expressed reflect my own views or the views of my guests, which may change at any moment. It's 8:04, and you're listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM, the real stepchild radio, what radio is meant to be. My theme music for the show is Coconuts on the CD Nature's Bounty by Mystical Moods. If you have any comments or suggestions, we invite you to write or call us at the station. Send your letters to WAIF FM, 1434 East McMillan Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45206. Or call us at the station at 749-1444. Well, good morning, Jim. Or Jim. Jim's not here yet. Bruce and Amy, you had some things that you wanted to talk about, I think, about the Purple People Bridge and what's going on down on the riverfront.
And it has become a very beautiful place over the past 2 years. This is the second year that the Greater Cincinnati Master Gardeners Association has planted the bridge. And we do have some big plans for expansion. When I was taking the classes last year, the instructors asked for new Master Gardener volunteer projects. And since I spend so much time on the bridge, I suggested that perhaps we extend the planting on the Cincinnati side across Pete Rose Way and up 3rd Street. The class named it the Path to the Taft because it leads to the Taft Museum. And we initially just wanted to get something better in place from when the Taft Museum reopened last May. And we did. The city of Cincinnati, Bob Richardson, the city architect, was able to move some pots off the bridge and onto the path so that we do have some plantings on the path. And recently somebody donated some hostas and we planted those on the north end of the path. It still can be a pretty scary place. This is a path that leads past an old ramp for the bridge, and there's a lot of brush and the trees on it.
That whole bridge venue is a very public place. I don't know how you keep it maintained and neat looking. When I've been down there, the bridge anyway has really been nice.
We do have a bridge team. There are about 50 master gardeners who are volunteers on the bridge team. And at any given time when we do the plantings early in the year and cleanup in October and November, we generally have about 20 to 25 volunteers who work on the bridge. And we also have what we call the spy team. We have two volunteers every week, and these volunteers find time to walk the bridge, look at what's happening, do some weeding, report that they need watering, and that's something that quite often happens,
and
generally keep it clean.
Bruce, I was going to ask about the watering. I always think about that, particularly when we've had the kind of summer that we've had this year. How do you water your plantings?
That is a critical part of just about every garden and every planting. And our major funder last year, and the biggest support, and the primary entity responsible for the bridge is South Bank Partners. That's the nonprofit arm of Newport on a Levee. And South Bank does the watering.
I see.
They're supposed to do the watering, I believe, two or three times a week.
Mm. And you kind of have to watch them?
And this is one of the functions of the spy team. Now, they don't go off the bridge on the Cincinnati side, so... we've been trying to find a way to get the pots watered on the Cincinnati side, and basically I've been doing the watering there. Of course, there's only six pots, so I get a dozen gallon jugs of water in my car and water them once or twice a week.
Oh, there's not a water supply over there?
There is a fire hydrant that's
right next to the bridge. There is a fire hydrant that's right next to the bridge, but we can't tap into that. We'll find ways. It's a possibility that the Parks Department may also do that in the future. Or I'll call them partner, but one new potential partner is the management of the Sawyer Point building. That's the building that's just across the street from the bridge, and it's a well-kept building. They are interested in the path because basically they overlook the path, and they have that interest also.
What about, I don't know if I should say this or not, but do you have any trouble with plants disappearing or?
Oh my, yes. It wasn't too big a problem last year, but this year when the plants were small, initially one or two disappeared, and then it seemed like a couple of weeks where just things really went to pot, to coin a phrase. There was one pot that was simply emptied, just everything was taken out of it.
That's a shame.
Yeah, and for some reason lantana, which is one of the plants that's in most of the pots, we've lost about a dozen of them. And people just seem to pull them out. I don't know whether it's kids, little kids picking flowers for mommy. And
I've even had that happen on a very limited basis in our garden.
Yeah.
Blooming plants that are close to the driveway.
Yeah.
You find pieces of them, but I think it is little kids picking flowers for
mommy. Or maybe big kids. There are quite a few events. There is what Cincinnati calls Party in the Park every Wednesday. And that's music and beer at Sawyer Point.
For the whole summer?
For the whole summer, yes, every Wednesday night. And we usually find some trash there. And that's part of the spy team, where the spy team goes over and picks up the trash. Mm-hmm. And, of course, on Monday mornings, there is generally a lot of trash for people going in and out of Newport and the Levee. And, of course, they had the Arts and Music Festival in Newport, so I haven't been across it yet this morning because it was raining when I got up, but I expect to find some trash today.
Well, of course, that bridge was really a kickoff for the Master Gardener Conference last year.
Absolutely.
So it got off to a pretty good start. But that's pretty impressive to have 50 Master Gardeners volunteering on one project. I don't know of any, certainly any other projects in this area that have that kind of turnout and participation.
Well, that's true, but we have to remember that the Purple People Bridge is the signature project of the Greater Cincinnati Master Gardeners. And this is, to my knowledge, the only project that is totally run by Master Gardeners. There are many other things where we volunteer, that St. Rita's, mm-hmm. School for the Deaf, the Cincinnati Zoo Trial Gardens.
Mm-hmm. Landfair.
Landfair.
Sure.
The Boone County Arboretum.
Yeah.
Volunteers from the Master Gardeners volunteer in many different areas, but this, to my knowledge, is the only exclusively Master Gardener volunteer project.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah, and it's totally run by the volunteers.
People ought to get down there and take a look at it.
Well, absolutely. If you're not walking across the bridge, I think you're missing something that's significant in Cincinnati. And I'll mention one of my other favorite things. The city of Cincinnati opened up the Theodore Berry International Park.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
And it was very nice last year. It was a beautiful park last year, but the Parks Department have outdone themselves this year. It is tremendous. In fact, I was hoping to talk to Jim about that. They have some beautiful ornamental grasses there. I think the park runs about a half a mile along the river, mm-hmm. and there are two paths, paved paths, so people ride their bikes there, and I jog there. They have these beautiful ornamental grasses that probably run a length of 100 yards along the path at one point. They have an interesting art area where they have some tree trunks that are arranged to fit with sunrise and sunset. And at noon, one of them has a hole in it, and the sun is supposed to shine through that hole.
Kind of like Stonehenge or something, yeah.
Yes, it kind of looks like Stonehenge. This year they added another sculpture. I'm not sure what it is, but it's a large circle of silver structures, and you can sit in the middle of this and just enjoy the shade and enjoy the park. It is a gem.
That's a nice place to be.
Yeah.
Talking about grass, I had some questions for Jim too. I was hoping to learn something more about ornamental grasses and grasses in general.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you know about grasses. I don't know that much about them, but
I know a little. There are some of them that are invasive. When I bought my house in Newport 6 years ago, I had a pampas grass,
uh-huh.
and there was just one. And over a 5-year period, I divided it and then divided each of the ones that I had divided and finally gave away 6 of them.
Yeah, well, a lot of them will spread and increase that way.
Absolutely.
You can divide them, I know that.
And the other one I have is called sea oat grass.
And okay, yeah, we've got some of that.
Yep, everywhere, right?
Not yet, because we planted it in a dry shade area.
Ah, okay.
And so far, it's containing more or less. It's increased some.
Yeah. In my ignorance, 5 years ago, I thought it was nice, so I kind of spread it around, and it's spreading around itself more.
Well, I read somewhere, and I've been looking for it, and I can't quite find it, where I read that grasses evolved about 12 million years ago. And then I read recently where somebody thinks that they've started up way back 60 to 75 million years ago during the time of the dinosaurs.
That's possible. They had to eat something.
Well, the dinosaurs did not eat grass. We know that. They did not eat grass. They ate conifers. In fact, they didn't even eat flowering plants, which came along about that time.
Okay. So they...
And I was hoping Jim could clarify that, because mm-hmm. he's been around a long time, but
you know. Not quite that long.
But the 12 million years ago makes a lot of sense to me, because that's when a lot of the grazing animals started.
Okay.
And grass is unique in that it grows from the ground up, as opposed to growing from the tips like most other plants do. And that kind of fits with the grazing lifestyle, shall I say.
Okay, yeah, you clip off the
right,
leaves. And,
right, and so that's a plant-animal combination that seems to fit.
Definitely,
and,
definitely.
So I don't know which is right, but and I know that there are warm season grasses and cool season grasses, and I'm not sure what all that means.
Yeah, yeah.
And how that works.
Well, we do on the bridge. Getting back to the bridge, one of the things that Ohio River Grasses did for us is Jim designed a planting area, and this is actually the old railroad bridge, old railroad bed that's above the walkway on the bridge, and this is about 150 feet long, and Jim gave the bridge team at cost, it was too expensive to donate, but at cost, 96-gallon pots of various ornamental grasses, and helped us plant them, which was quite a task.
Yeah.
So if you are headed towards Cincinnati on the Ohio, on the Kentucky side of the bridge, look up as you're approaching the bridge to your right, and you can see these beautiful ornamental grasses.
Yeah.
They're new this year, so they're smaller, and there's a lot of space between each one, but next year they should be really beautiful.
Now, what kind of containers are they planted in now?
They're not in containers. We took some soil. I'm not sure that the correct name, but Evans Landscaping did donate some soil,
mm-hmm.
and we, under the guidance of Dave Kester, the Campbell County agent, who's actually part of the bridge team, we put the soil there to the proper depth, and at Jim Hansel's insistence, we developed a serpentine pattern for this soil. We moved a lot of soil, I'll tell you.
Oh, boy, I guess.
And then planted the grasses. And so basically they are there on a layer of topsoil that's probably a foot and a half deep. And then we planted them and mulched them this May. So it was quite a task for about 25 volunteers at that time.
Mm-hmm.
In the first week of May, we had a planting on May 4th. That's where we planted the raised area. And on May 6th, we planted the rest of the bridge.
Uh-huh.
Now, I talk about people who donate flowers. As you go onto the bridge on the Kentucky side, there is a very long planter.
Right.
And all of those plants in the planter have been donated by various garden shops. And, of course, the East Row Garden Club donated part of it. And Campbell Kearney Extension designed and planted in the area there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The reason I was asking about the containers is that was one of the questions that Amy had, was about how grasses do in containers. And, you know, while you were talking, I was thinking, I'm not sure at what point you cross over from being a container to being a bed. Or a planter, you know, because certainly that one along the entrance to the bridge on the Kentucky side is, that's big. I wouldn't call that a container anymore.
Right, and the raised area, the railroad bed, is definitely an area, a grassy area. But each of our pots, we've got more than 60 pots there, and part of the design is to center some grass in each of the containers, a taller grass, and that gives it some height and gives it some decoration.
It's been a perennial grass, though, that comes back? Or are we still working on that?
We're still working on that. We have some miscanthus in the long planter on the Kentucky side. They've come back.
Okay.
Along with a boxwood for each section. It's a dwarf miscanthus. What has been in the pots on the bridge generally hasn't come back, and under Jim Hansel's guidance, basically we removed all of the grasses this spring from the individual pots. Individual pots are about 3 feet deep, and the round ones are about 2.5 to 3 feet in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have some oblong ones, which are either 5 or 6 feet long by 2 feet.
I just am interested in some perennial grasses that would come back in containers. I've been trying to convert a little bit by little bit every year containers to perennials.
Okay.
I've had good luck with hostas and ferns,
mm-hmm.
sedums, heuchera,
mm-hmm.
and I think it would be really nice to have grasses. And I may try some this year.
Yeah, the And you can ask Jim about the details, but there is a dwarf miscanthus in the planter, the long planter. However, dwarf in this case means about 2 to 2.5 feet high.
That sounds good.
That's a pretty big plant. Actually, the grass is growing and it's falling forward in the planters and covering up the boxwood that we have there.
Oh, well, Felder Rushing. I think he's retired extension agent from down in Mississippi, Louisiana somewhere. He's quite a character. And he says planting containers is very simple. You just need three things: something pointy, something roundy, and something frilly.
Right.
That's all there is to it. He simplifies everything down to the basics.
And, but you have to put them in the right places also.
Well, yeah, I suppose. But it seems to me you could probably, with the variety of ornamental grasses, you could probably meet all three of those forms just with grasses and have a grass planter.
That's possible.
Kind of interesting.
Yeah. One of the interesting things about the grasses on the bridge is the wind. Because for the most part, there is a prevailing wind from the west.
Yeah.
But once in a while, it moves, it changes. And so sometimes you cross the bridge and everything is leaning forward across the front of the pots. But other times, it's kind of leaned back like the barber's been there and cut it and moved it back.
Yeah. Amy got a couple of little things. So what do you call it? Ponytail grass?
It's. I'm sorry, I don't have the Latin name. I just found it this year, and it is supposed to be perennial. I don't think it will be in the pots, but the texture of it is like it's almost hairy.
Oh, okay.
And it blows in the wind, and you can kind of arrange it or spread it out, and it's really a neat little plant.
Mm-hmm.
It's very soft, and you could tie it in a ponytail. I'm sure.
Oh my gosh!
You know,
okay.
If you wanted to, and we have two of them. In pots that have faces on them, so.
You might also want to look at, what's the method of communication now? The glass wire.
Fiber optics.
Fiber optic glass.
Yes. Yeah,
we've had that, but it's an annual.
Okay, it is an annual.
Yeah, that's
I got the first ones this year and put them in pots, and they're just hanging beautifully across the front of the pots right now.
You may can bring them in. I don't know how they work as a houseplant, but you might could save them that way.
That's possible. I tried to save the first my first annuals last winter. I brought some coleus and some a couple of other different types of plants, and
did
kept them in my cellar.
The whole plant or
the
cutting?
Whole pot.
How did it work for you?
Getting the big pots in and taking care of them, putting them sort of near a window in the cellar, worked. When we were going through the Master Gardener class, we were urged to take coleus cuttings for a plant mm-hmm. sale this past spring, and I got a lot of them. We actually got some from the zoo, and... Actually, I got busted when I was trying to take some from the Purple People Bridge. I wasn't officially on the team at that time, and the security told me I couldn't take them. I had to put them back, and I did. But unfortunately, all of the cuttings that I took, the coleus cuttings, they rooted in my cellar, and I put them into some pots, and then they died.
That
did you miss them?
No.
Cuttings like to be missed. We found out while they're rooting and happy to stay happy.
Yeah, and unfortunately, they were in part of my cellar. There where it's the washer and the dryer, and that was the only reason I go to that area. And it's once a week, maybe. And
I find it difficult to get on a watering schedule other than the houseplants that are there, the ones that I put on the third floor or put away. It's hard to remember. So
out of sight, out of mind. Yeah.
Exactly.
And we've got a little greenhouse in the backyard, and this would be the third year, I guess. But we took a bunch of coleus cuttings and put a rutone on them and stuck them in some good soil, and they just were not doing well at all because I wasn't misting them.
Okay.
And so I got a 10-gallon container and mounted a paint sprayer on it and hooked it up with a digital timer.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it sprayed for a minute once a day, and that just seemed to solved the problem. They perked right up and did okay.
Well, that's interesting.
Because we don't have water pressure out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to get a little creative.
Okay.
I tell you, it looks like Jim's not going to be here to answer all these grass questions. I did get some information together, but I think I'll wait till after the break to do that. Talking about the weather for just a minute, it felt kind of like we're getting automated. It was like autumn
yeah.
out there the
mm-hmm.
last few days. I know that sometimes when you get a cold snap in the fall, it'll fool some of the fruit trees into blooming when it gets warm again.
Oh, really?
Because
okay.
the trees, pear trees particularly, I think, don't require much of a cool period to make them think it's winter.
Okay.
And so that happened last year. I know we saw some fruit trees blooming, street trees, decorative things. And they, of course, wouldn't bloom the next spring again. It just,
mm-hmm.
it just fools them. And I was wondering if that would happen with this cold spell we're having here. But I found some information that says while the high lately has been low, particularly in July, it's several degrees below normal on average. The low temperature is not low. In fact, it's a little bit warmer.
Yeah, I've noticed several nights when I was hoping the temperature would go down into the low 60s, and it's only been down to 70.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
warm.
So we've really been in a very narrow range, which is really unusual. And I'm hope to have Jim O'Brien from Channel 5, the meteorologist, on in a couple of weeks. And,
oh, okay.
And
that'd
ask
be nice.
Him about the strange weather and is it connected to El Nino or what's going on here. You know, it's strange.
Mm-hmm. Well, it could be related to cloudy nights where yeah. the clouds just hold the heat in.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed it was clear Saturday night
mm-hmm.
and Saturday night it got very nice and cold.
Yeah, yeah, it did. But it's really been nice the last 3 or 4 days anyway.
Definitely.
It's supposed to warm up tomorrow, I think, though.
Yes.
And fortunately, we got a little rain, too, which was welcome. Okay, it's 8:29, and you're listening to the Master Gardener Hour, the shortest hour in radio with your host, John Duke, and my guests, Amy Duke and Bruce Murray. On WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM. You can listen to the Master Gardener Hour here every Monday this summer from 8 to 9. Bruce, you've got some information, some public service announcements. And
absolutely, absolutely.
Talk about
You know, one of the things we were talking about is the planters on the bridge, and the Campbell County Extension designed one section of the long planter, and they put some millet into the planter, and it's beautiful. And I'm not sure whether that's an ornamental grass or not. But one thing about it is they have these long cattail things sticking up, and every time I walk across there, you see the birds.
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure. That was one of the questions I had for Jim, is what's really the difference between true grasses and sedges and rushes and there's a class of plants called cereals, too, which are primarily food plants, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and millet might be
millet,
one of those.
I think
yeah.
it's cereal, certainly, yeah. yeah.
But just seeing the birds made me decide to pick out the announcement on the Audubon Society.
Oh, good.
And the Audubon Society of Ohio meets the third Monday of each month at Winton Woods. Call 513-7926. That's 513-741-7926 for more information about the Audubon Society. And now we have an antique treasure here in Newport, in Cincinnati, on the Ohio River that we should talk about, and that's the Musical Magic on the Ohio River at the Showboat Majestic. Now that's located on the Cincinnati Riverside, just under the Taylor Southgate Bridge. The Showboat Majestic is a National Historic Landmark and continues to delight audiences with a unique blend of charm, nostalgia, history, and the best in live theatrical music entertainment. For tickets to the Showboat Majestic's current or upcoming season, and that's a current season, I noticed there were quite a few cars there in the evenings this past weekend. Call the Showboat Majestic box office at 241-6550. And, of course, that is area code 513. And finally, just the perfect announcement. I guess Amy picked this one up. Today's subject, and that's Gene's Bluegrass Breakdown. And that's bluegrass music here on WAIF. And if it's Saturday and 6 o'clock in the morning, tune in to Gene's Bluegrass Breakdown with your host, Gene. He plays the best of bluegrass, some old, some new, and some gospel, too. Hear the latest from national and local bands. Dial in to 88.3 to find out the dates of upcoming festivals and tell your friends about us here at WAIF Cincinnati.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. That's a lot of good information there.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, I mentioned cereals. I read an article that was talking about that 99% of the agricultural production in this country depends on only 24 plants.
Wow.
And more than 50% of it is made up of rice, wheat, and corn. And so we're very productive in terms of food in this country, as everybody knows. And one of the reasons is because of corporate emphasis on increasing the yield of these food products. And they've done that in large part through genetic modification of the food plants. And this article was explaining what they're starting to do now, because they've increased quite a bit in the last 50 years, the yield, and they're kind of running out of options, I guess. But the trick that they're doing is called marker-assisted breeding. And they think that the particularly the corn, but also the wheat and maybe the rice, originally when they started hybridizing them, came from only about 20 plants. And so they didn't really tap the original wild plant gene pool. And so they're back crossing now to some of the wild crops to try to increase the genetic content, really make up a variety, I guess, of these plants. And they've also encoded or decoded, I guess, the genetics on a lot of I think rice genome is complete now, and they're working on wheat and corn. And so that if they find out a gene sequence that does something good and has some property that they want, rather than splicing it into the genetics of the crop, which requires a lot of regulatory hoops and takes a long time and whatnot, what they're doing is they're just breeding like you normally would, natural hybridizing, but then they test the genetics to see if that gene marker is in a particular plant, and if it is, then they select for that. And so they bypass all the regulatory business. And it's really not gene splicing. Genetically modified food has a lot of public resistance still.
Absolutely. There could be some concerns there.
There are concerns, and I don't know how realistic they are. I read where that in 2002 in Zimbabwe and Zambia, they were having a famine, and the government turned down free food.
I remember that.
Because it was
genetically modified.
Yeah, so I'm not sure that's a wise decision. But anyway, I thought that was interesting, what they're doing now to try to improve the yields, and things like size of the grain on corn is a factor. Because they're saying that by 2050, that the world population is probably going to be about 9 billion, another 50% increase. And I don't know, they got to do a lot of good work to be able to feed that many people.
Mm-hmm. That seems like a believable figure, but it seems to me it could be low. Because I seem to remember in the 50s, one of my teachers talking about how there were 2 billion people. in the world. And now they're about six.
Well, the curves I've seen, it is leveling off.
Okay.
We may be living near the peak of our species.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But...
And it's interesting, I remember reading in college John Hobbes' Leviathan. It was a huge tome. I've forgotten most of it, except the part where he said the land has no value because there was so much land that we'd never fill it up.
Yeah. Surprise,
that was several hundred years ago.
Right.
And you know, they say not to ever say never.
Absolutely.
Okay. I guess we can talk about anything we want to talk about. Jim's not showing up, and I'm about exhausted on talking about grass.
Well, I'll never run out of things to say about the bridge. And there's a couple things I will bring up about the bridge is that we've received funding from Southgate Partners and from Campbell County in the past for the bridge. This is an exclusive Master Gardener project, and we do have a fund drive starting. We've gotten a couple of people who supported us. Carl Linder has given us some money, and there's a furniture designer and store out on Beachmont Avenue called Sit, and they've donated not only funds from an event that they held last spring, but they've donated, or they will donate when we're ready for them, when the city of Cincinnati is ready, some benches to put along the bridge, along the path, so that people can sit and relax. But we are asking for donations, and you can send these donations to the Campbell County Extension. I mentioned that Dave Kester is part of the bridge team. But the address to send any donations is the Purple People Bridge Landscape Fund, Greater Cincinnati Master Gardener Association, 3500 Alexandria Park in Highland Heights, Kentucky, 41076. And any checks that you have should be made out to the Purple People Bridge Landscape Fund.
Okay. What was that number again on Alexandria? Is Alexandria Pike?
3500 Alexandria Pike in Highland Heights, Kentucky. Okay. If you want to find a folder that explains information about the bridge, if you cross the bridge into Cincinnati and cross Pete Rose Way, at the beginning of the path to the Taft, there is a small box in one of the planters, and there's a nice little three-piece folder with information about the bridge, how it started, and how it's developing. We're not only looking at the extension into Cincinnati, which I think is a very important part of it. There's so much in Cincinnati that this could lead to. But the city of Newport is also interested in carrying plants up either Monmouth or York or whatever up to the Peace Bell.
Mm, okay.
And so there's a lot more that the Master Gardeners can do and a lot more that both the cities of Cincinnati and Newport can do.
It sounds like this bridge project may be invasive. Spreading up on both sides of the river.
Well, we have to work a lot harder to make it invasive than some of the plants do.
Yeah.
It's not a natural invasiveness.
Okay. Let's talk about gardens. I know you've got a nice garden, and you see a lot of gardens around in Newport and other places. What are some of your favorite garden plants?
Well, I liked roses, and I have several roses. I spent 5 years in Texas, in Dallas, and I was traveling to Louisiana quite a bit. And the headquarters for the American Rose Society is east of Shreveport, Louisiana, along Interstate 20. And they have about 40 acres of rose gardens there. It is a beautiful place if you'd ever like to visit it.
It's in Louisiana?
It's in Louisiana, just across the Louisiana border from Texas on Interstate 20. But one day I stopped there, and there's no way I could ever cover the entire 40 acres, but I did a sniff test and found what was my favorite aroma, and that's the Don Juan rose. So I grow Don Juan roses in my garden. And it's close to the perfect rose. It's a climbing rose with a good long stem. The blooms last about 2 weeks, and you cut them, and it continues to bloom all summer. The other rose I like is called a Cecile Brunner, and that's an antique rose, and I grew it to just cover an arbor over a sidewalk, but now I also have an arbor seat in the garden, and that runs, the Cecile Brunner is stretching about a 15 feet length in either direction and at least 10 feet tall.
Wow. Well, now, these are not hybrid teas.
No, no, I haven't grown any hybrid teas.
They're pretty tough. We tried that a little while and finally gave up on them. It's just too much... too labor-intensive.
They were annuals for us.
Okay, I can believe that. Now, I spend my vacation on an island off the coast of New Hampshire, and the rose out there that grows wild and gets very big, has to be cut back once in a while, is the Rugosa rose. And that that grows on an island with a topsoil level, a layer of about 3 inches. It grows in the cracks and the crevices. And we have some, there's some tennis courts on Star Island where I go, and there was one next to the tennis courts, and these roses, the Rugosas, both red and white, has spread to about a 15-foot wide area and at least 10 feet high. And it was beautiful.
It's amazing. And they're like shrub roses?
Yeah. And the kids actually tunneled into these roses and could run around under the roses and hide from the people. And so that is a very hardy rose. They survive the winters in Maine. And I remember in one of the garden magazines there was an article about a woman in Maine who actually specializes in Rugosa roses. So you can buy them, and I think they would tolerate the warm area here. So.
Okay. What about you, Amy? What about your favorites?
I have a lot of favorites. This year particularly, I'm very pleased with the new hostas that we put in because they're getting enough light with the tree out that they're actually lush.
Well, we just had a delightful experience. Linda Kreidler just
hey
walked
there.
In.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning. And Jim didn't show up.
No, he didn't show up. Yeah.
Didn't show up. Well, he might have an emergency down at the...
It could be. I hope he's okay.
Yeah. Hopefully everything's okay. He is doing
otherwise,
a show now.
As you know what is grass.
What? Oh, God. So you guys were talking about ornamental grasses today, the Purple People Bridge.
Right.
What else have you covered? I got
We just
on...
started talking about what favorite plants are, and we just talk about anything we want to talk about.
Oh, gosh. And, I did spend some time out in my garden this weekend because it was so incredibly beautiful.
Yeah.
And my
great.
Son had a party on Saturday night, so I had to do aluminum can patrol. Very early in the morning before my neighbors woke up, you know. So just to clean up the street and also clean up the garden a little bit. And, you know, after I did my little duty, I sat down in the chair and just meditated on all the color. You know, it was just incredible to have that nice clear light and that cool air blowing over you. You know,
well,
it was really a nice...
How are things down at the shop on 1313
Main Street?
From noon to 6 on Wednesday through Saturday, right?
Behind Urban Eden, there's a really nice shop down on Main Street that's been there for many years. And Julie Fay is the owner of that shop. Uh-huh. It's called Urban Eden. And they have all types of things for interiors and exteriors. But I was fortunate enough to be hired to renovate the courtyard behind that shop in this really old building. I mean, it's got to be 100 years old, obviously. And the brickwork was so lovely.
Yeah.
Well, I took a shovel and I excavated a lot of the soil that had been composted leaves and things. And picked up a lot of glass, lots of broken glass. Incredible, but it was a downtown and urban environment for quite some time.
And Kreidler Design is back
well,
in
that's
there.
What I'm getting to. Yeah. Well, when I was installing the new plantings in this courtyard, she opened up this room off the courtyard and said she'd been using it as storage. And I just about flipped. I couldn't believe it. And I said, well, I'll use it, you know, and I'm using that as a showroom for my garden design business.
Yeah.
And it's nice. Every final Friday, well, last final Friday, which was June's final Friday, was my grand opening. And the final Friday walks are really nice down there. They've been going on for years and years and years, and they're in conjunction with all the galleries and Pendleton Arts Center up on Northern Main Street. And it happens every final Friday from 6 till 10, I think. It goes on a little longer than that at night, especially in some of the bars and restaurants around there. But anyway...
Well, the next final Friday is this coming Friday, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and I will be down there. I had about 150 to 200 people come in.
Great.
And walk through a last final Friday, and it's a great party, and it's just a nice thing, you know, to really be able to see all the architecture down there.
Yeah.
And there's so much urban housing going in down there, lots of condos.
The thing that struck me about that little courtyard back there where you fixed up is the windows.
They're
incredibly tall. The ceilings must be 20-foot ceilings.
Well, I had a friend down there when I was on the open house evening, and he's an architect, and he was telling me that we really analyzed MySpace because at one time MySpace was the main front living room of the building, and then we analyzed which buildings had been added on. And when you walk in to MySpace, you do notice how tall the ceilings are. They're like 18-20 feet tall, and the windows were originally floor-to-ceiling windows, but they're up right now almost 5 feet. I think they're up to my nose, and the base, you know, the base of the window. And we looked at all the marks on the walls, and you could see that had been an excavated space. You can see the rafter or the joists coming through the brick, and the originally those ceilings in those windows were only like 3 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
So there's another like who knows how many feet down that they excavated out. So it's really nice. And I'm going to be having a lot of workshops down there. Starting, I believe, in October, we'll be having garden class workshops, shade garden workshops is one of the subjects. We're going to have those held on Sunday so more people can come. We're going to also do some garden-type craftsy things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And those will be maybe before Christmas so people can make gifts and stuff. But anyway, it is fun down there, and it's interesting to be downtown. It's it's a strange environment for me anyway.
Well, it's
suburbia.
It's good to see you again.
Oh, it's good to be on the air.
Yeah.
Good old digging in, getting dirty in the garden hasn't
been
on for a long time.
Right.
But I'm busy with administration things for WAIF, being on the board of directors.
Yeah. So. Yeah, keeps you busy.
Yeah. That's what I came down here to do.
Are they going to get the streaming fixed or not?
Hopefully, yes.
Okay, they are going to spend the money.
Oh, yeah, we've already appropriated that, but we're not allowed to talk about WAIF business on the air.
Okay, I won't talk about it.
That's administration business.
I was just giving people hope.
Oh, no, the streaming hasn't been working, and unfortunately, it's time to buckle down. And we're going to be using all that pledge money that people sent in. It was so nice to pledge to us, and if you can join up or if you want to renew your membership, I have to say this.
I need to do that.
If you want to renew your membership, you need to do it before August 20th, if you're planning to come to the
board meeting,
which is on September 19th, and you can vote for the 6 seats that need to be filled for the Board of Trustees.
Okay.
I am not running this year. I'm
giving it
finishing
up.
My first year of a 2-year term, and a lot of work.
Yeah. Okay. So. Well, that's good. We were just talking about favorite plants.
Oh, God, have you seen that new verbascum that's out?
Well, I want...
Tropical Punch?
No, we don't have that one.
I think it's called verbascum. It's that weedy type of... Mullein. It's a mullein. That's not a verbascum, right?
Oh.
It's a mullein, and it's a propagated mullein, and it's on the cover of one of the catalogs that I just received. In one of our shows last year, John, we talked about catalogs starting to come. And it's gorgeous. It's a peach, yellow, and orange, and it kind of fluctuates in color, gets that really nice height that mullein gets. and has a neat silvery gray fuzzy leaf. And you can, there are about three or four different places you can send for the seeds. Wonderful plant.
Check into that.
When you asked me my favorite plant, I went to the perennial slide, but if I had to pick just one group of annuals, I would say the new Suncolias.
Yeah.
For variety. The reds, the greens, the golds, it's just been incredible in our garden this year.
We've had a lot of people through our garden, and I don't know how many of those different colors of Suncolias you've got, but they've really held up well. And in late afternoon, they don't wilt or anything. And the other annual that draws a lot of comment is the Persian Shield.
Right.
People don't seem to have seen that around very much.
I know, because everybody used that. That was a tropical house plant.
Yeah.
And as of about 10 years ago, people really started to introduce tropical house plants into their landscaping.
Yeah.
And it was almost unheard of before, but that is the way to get a lot of color.
We always get questions.
Yeah.
Regardless of the group, we get questions of what is the plant.
Yeah. That's a lovely plant. I've used it a lot in my gardens.
Yeah.
We have too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's season's kind of winding down now. The daylilies are done. And we're starting to cut foliage as soon as Amy's back gets better.
Right. Audrey, I overdid it.
Oh, God.
Too much gardening.
Yeah.
But things are winding down, and I guess we need to start winding down here a little bit. I wanted to mention some upcoming events that gardeners might be interested in. The Boone County Fair is going to be August 9th through the 14th, I guess that is. And I'm going to be there at least one or two days. And if you're not familiar with Boone County Extension, they have a fantastic amount of information that they put out and flyers and a lot of free education classes on just about anything gardening that you can imagine. And to learn more about that, you can call the Boone County Extension at 859-586-6101. And the Hamilton County Fair is coming up, too. That's going to be August 4th through the 8th, and that's over in Carthage, and that's usually a fun place. They have some interesting animals and things to look at over there, especially for the kids.
I remember going there when I was little.
Yeah. Kids.
Still around.
County fairs are great for kids. Yeah. They really are. And Boone County and Hamilton County are two pretty good ones. I also wanted to mention Imago, which is a nonprofit ecological organization in Price Hill. They're having a fundraiser July 31st at 7 o'clock to 11. They're going to have a silent auction, games, activities, food, and live entertainment. You can call 921-8455, or you can find them on the web at www.imagoearthcenter.org. Which reminds me, I was going to ask Jim another question about his webpage, because Ohio Rivergrass, you know, would be O-R-G. And so, yeah, O-R-G. Okay? And so I was wondering why they don't have org.org as their webpage.
It might be org.com.
Could be. I don't know. Anyway. Next week, my guest is going to be Sue Magnus from the Hamilton County Department of Environmental Services to talk about soil and compost. So tune in next week to learn all about how to feed your soil and make your plants grow better. The extension offices generally tell me that plant problems that they hear about are usually about 90% soil related. And so next week ought to be pretty interesting. And did you know that WAIF depends on you, our listeners, for financial support? We're an all-volunteer, nonprofit community radio station. For only $15, you can become a member of WAIF FM. You can join on the web page at www.waif883.org, or you can come down here to the studio and sign up. If you want to listen to previous Master Gardener Hour programs, you can go to the American Compost Society webpage, and this is at www.writethisforme.com/ACS, and you click on the Master Gardener Hour link, and you can see some of our past programs there. Okay. Bruce, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, there just might be one more announcement.
Okay.
This is the Master Gardener Hour. And Master Gardeners are educated through county extensions in Hamilton, Claremont, Boone, Campbell, Kenton, and I believe Warren counties. These are all part of the Greater Cincinnati Master Gardener Association. But there is a Master Gardener class that will be starting in Hamilton County in September. So if anybody's interested in going through the coursework, unfortunately I don't have the number here, but they can call the Hamilton County Extension in Springdale and talk to Bobby Strangfeld and possibly sign up.
Okay, thanks. I don't have that number either, but I'll have it next week, and because we can announce that. There's another free thing coming up that people might want to pick up on, and it's over at Landfair Retirement Community. This is a free presentation by another Master Gardener, Chris McCullough. It's going to be taking care of those indoor plants, and it's going to be at the Landfair Retirement Community in College Hill. And if you are interested in attending that, it's free. It's going to be Wednesday, September 15th at 2 p.m. in the afternoon. You can call Nancy Thomas at 591-4501. Okay. Amy, you got anything else?
I'd just like to say I enjoyed being here today and chatting with you and Bruce and Linda.
You got anything, Linda?
Everybody get up and go out in the yard.
I assume it's not raining out right now. Is that correct?
It's just drizzling. They won't melt.
Well, I want to thank you all for coming in, and especially you, Bruce, for filling in and being our impromptu guest today.
I'm happy to do that.
And I guess it's time to start our theme song and head on out of here. Theme music is Coconuts on the CD Nature's Bounty by Mystical Moods. This has been the Master Gardener Hour with John Duke. You can listen to the Master Gardener Hour every Monday morning this summer from 8 to 9 a.m. on WAIF Cincinnati 88.3 FM. All we ask is 1 hour a week. We welcome your comments and suggestions, so please send a note to WAIF, 1434 East McMillan Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45206, in care of the Master Gardener Hour. I'll be back next Monday. My guest will be Sue Magnus from Hamilton County Department of Environmental Services. That's only 167 hours from now, so make them count. Stay tuned for One Voice, and take care of yourself. Your garden needs you. Thanks for listening.